We're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, and we're always sharing the success of entrepreneurship. All this week for this segment, we're being hosted by the law firm of Tarlow, Reed, Hart & Rogers in the Prudential Center, also the home for Eataly. And if you have never been to an Eataly, it is an experience not to be missed. I'll tell that to my co-host, Mark Z, of Mark Z Legal Staffing. Before you leave here, you want to pick up your lunch.
You know how Mark Z is with food, Jeff.
This place is over the top. And we're interviewing our litigation reporter, Mark Furman, also from the law firm of Tarlow, Reed, Hart & Rogers. Welcome, Mark.
Hi there, Jeffrey and Mark. Great to be with you.
Great to be with you, Mark.
Mark, we're going to be talking about partners today.
Yes. I'm, as you know, a business litigator, and I handle a lot of disputes between co-owners of businesses or real estate, whether they're partnerships, LLCs, corporations, whatever. More than one person comes together to start a business, and frequently they've got a great idea for business, and they're pooling resources in some fashion, and they need to organize. So very common today that a limited liability company gets set up, very easy to do, and hopefully they have a operating agreement drawn up, which is in effect a partnership agreement. The rules of the road that's going to govern their relationship, not only at the beginning when they have an idea and they're a startup, but also in the event they're is an unhappy turn of events and people are having trouble getting along and somebody wants to throw somebody, one of the partners, out of the company, or the company's going to dissolve or whatever the case may be. What are the rules? So one of the things I've observed over my decades of practice is that entrepreneurs and business owners don't take the time and give the attention to the partnership agreement, because there's an assumption everything's going to be great forever.
Right.
It's going to be beautiful. It's going to, as Donald
Trump, we're going to make so much money.
We're going to make so much money. It's going to be so beautiful. As Donald Trump would say, we're going to be tired of winning. Okay? And, you know,
when do we start winning?
So these, you know, what starts out at minor disagreements and differences of opinion have a way of festering and not getting resolved, and they grow, and people feel that the compensation system isn't fair, and they're carrying other people, and other people are in their pocket, so to speak. And but so they're focused on all these issues, but when it comes time to prepare the partnership agreement, they have this attitude that it's just boilerplate. It's one of my pet peeves I've talked about before. There's no such thing as boilerplate.
Right.
All boilerplate means is some lawyer takes some agreement off the shelf that he or she used for some totally different business and used whatever provisions happen to be in that. And a lawyer prepares the operating agreement for two partners or three partners or eight partners or 10 partners, and everybody has a different interest. Everybody's bringing something different to the table.
Right.
Everybody may be putting in different amounts of money. Everybody may have different percentage interests in the business entity. So it does matter because it comes time, you know, hope it's nice to do anything, everything unanimously, but what if you can't?
Right.
What if somebody thinks that I'm not pulling my weight. Let's get rid of Furman. What's the vote that's going to be required? The time to check it out.
Mark Z is the example. Let's get rid of Mark Z.
Okay. So the time to look and see what you agree to is not when your partners are trying to boot you out of the company.
Right.
The time to look is to know ahead of time. And so
let me just ask this thing. If you have a – all right, you set up a partnership agreement – not a partnership agreement. You set up a partnership and there's no operating agreement. And all of a sudden you find that out of the three people with the idea that everybody's going to put in the same effort to make that partnership work, and all of a sudden one person is not showing up to work like you thought they would be doing, hitting the deadlines that like you thought they would be doing, and you want them out. If you have no partnership agreement, you just have that filing, what do you do?
Well, and that's very common. I see it all the time. So just like if you don't have a will, you have a will. The state made it for you.
Okay.
It bears no relationship in all likelihood to what you want your will to say, but the state has a law. It's called intestacy. If you die without a will, this is where your money goes. Similarly, there are some laws that speak to how things work in corporations or LLCs or partnerships, and they may bear no relationship to what you want. And you know, one of the interesting things in these closely held entities where it's just private companies with a small number of owners is, like partnerships, you owe a fiduciary duty to each of your partners, not just the entity, to each other under Massachusetts law, which means you can't put your personal interests ahead because you're a fiduciary.
Of a corporate interest or the other shareholders' interest.
It's the highest duty in the law is to be a fiduciary. You've got to take your self-interest out of the equation. So if you don't have a partnership agreement that eliminates fiduciary duties, when it comes time to take a vote on whether or not you're going to throw Mark Z or Mark Furman out of the business entity, when you vote yes, keep in mind that you're a fiduciary that owes Mark Z or Mark Furman the fiduciary duty of utmost good faith. And so the courts have decided what that means, and it ties the hands from a simple majority vote ends the decision.
Right.
It creates a way of looking at a termination as to whether or not it's lawful or not. You know, it looks at what was the expectations of the parties going into the deal.
Right.
It looks at whether there's a legitimate business purpose, yes, but also whether or not that purpose could be fulfilled in a way less drastic than booting Mark Z or Mark Furman out of the company. So let's say, you know, we know Mark Z has enormous strengths.
We're just still looking for them.
but hypothetically, it's you know, managing the people on the manufacturing floor of the company is not one of his strengths.
Right.
He's great at sales. He's great at marketing. He's great at the finances.
Got a great topspin.
He's got a great. He's a great tennis player. He does a fabulous job with HR and reinforcing the culture. But when it comes to how the widgets are made,
that's not Mark.
It's just not his thing.
No.
So the partners vote. He's out of the company. Which, by the way, they're probably makes him give up his ownership stake, his minority ownership stake, for pennies on the dollar of what's it worth. So what have the partners done? They've enriched themselves at the expense of Mark. They've taken his equity at an unfair price, and they've deprived him of a large reason why he came into the deal,
right,
which is to be paid.
Right.
Because in private companies, employment is usually where a big source of the benefit of ownership derives from, the right to be employed.
Right.
So somebody might argue, remember I said that if there's a less restrictive alternative to meet the legitimate business purpose caused by Mark's challenges in running the manufacturing operation, well, how about we play to Mark's strengths and let him do the 18 things he's doing great,
right,
and put someone else in charge of manufacturing? Is that a less restrictive way to meet the legitimate business purposes of the company? And so so you take stealing your equity, largely
right,
stealing,
right,
90% of the value, you get 10%,
right,
and losing employment, and you're making big money, which happens to mean that they're going to split your money and put it in each of their pockets.
Right.
So when I talk about fiduciary duty, I'm talking about they don't have the right to put their individual interests ahead of, you know, what's necessary,
right,
for the company. So those cases, believe it or not, happen all the time.
Interesting.
Because people don't always get along. Another,
especially in family businesses.
Right.
Family businesses are a great example.
Can we take a break and do and come back and talk about that? Is that all right with you?
Sure.
So if somebody wants to reach you to talk about shareholder issues, how would they find you?
I can be reached at mfurman@tbhr-law.com or at 617-218-2025.
Great. We're gonna take a break and remind everyone this is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. We'll be right back after these messages.